Dr. Alex, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
Thanks for coming on, and thanks for taking a couple extra minutes. I just got home 2 minutes ago.
That's okay. Do you need a second? I mean,
nah, let's go. Let's go for it. How was your day?
I just got home from work too. Yeah.
Me too.
How about you?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. It's yeah, it looks like the last 2 weeks, a lot of like cancellations and no shows, unfortunately. But because that's how it goes sometimes.
You're fresh out of residency, right?
Yeah, I just finished in June.
How's private practice treating you?
It's good. It's been very busy. We take almost all insurances except for a couple like Infinity and maybe a couple other, but most of them. Yeah. So it's busy. It's good. I'd like to be busy.
Yeah. How's the learning curve? A little different than residency?
Yeah, it is. It is a bit different. It's definitely a bit different. It's because also, you know, you might not have a surgeon with you in the office every day. You know, you might just be on your own, and which is fine. It's just a different structure, I guess.
So there is multiple locations, multiple associates then, sounds like?
Oh, yeah. There's 8-9 offices, 8-9 surgeons. Right now, there's usually a second one in the office every day, but then there's like an afternoon here and there where I'll be there alone. Where are you practicing right now? You're in Arizona?
God. So I do a lot of stuff. So I own a solo practice that's full-time in Arizona, and I work part-time in Austin, Texas, about 2 weekends a month. I'm a very part-time attending at where I trained for my residency at Carle Foundation Hospital in Illinois. Nice. And then I also, what I'm more known for is the teaching, mostly remote Anchorage for on the implant side. So that keeps me busy on the times I'm not working in Austin or in my office. So I do a lot of stuff. I fly almost every week, probably. So yeah.
A lot of flying. Yeah, that does sound like a lot of traveling. And where is, you said Illinois? That's the resident?
Carle Foundation Hospital. It's in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, south of Chicago. Yeah, so it's a 4-year program. At the time, they used to take one resident a year and one non-CAT. So when I trained, we were at Q2 for basically 4 years. And then full head and neck oncology, 2 to 3 fruit flaps a week, all the cleft lip and palate stuff, all the tricks for the ICU, level 1 trauma call 24/7. The benefit of all that is we got to do everything.
The negative right
worked. Yeah, but honestly, I would do. I loved where I trained. It was my number one pick. Those are the two things I want. I want a level 1 trauma 24/7 because when I was a dental student, I externed at places where OMFS in a bigger facility sometimes can be treated like a second class citizen. So you know, when we were on general surgery, we were considered senior residents. So I was taking, you know, full body trauma, emergencies, OR by myself, taking care of all the inpatient, you know, gen surge patients and stuff. And then there was no anesthesia residents, so we got to do everything. And then no neurosurgery. So I was actually doing burr holes and crannies and stuff when I was on call with them. It was awesome. They treated us really good. I'm a little further removed than you are, but at the time it was pretty wild. But at the same time, like the training was awesome, man. Like I actually really enjoyed my general surgery rotation. It was
really,
it was a great training program, and the program director is still there. My good buddy is full-time attending there. So he's the one that lines up the full arch cases. I'll go and do zygos and full arch cases with the residents and stuff. I managed to get a deal through the hospital to figure out how to get more of these patients in. It's still not a ton. It's harder to do it in a hospital setting. I'm sure you understand, but we're doing a lot more than I did as a resident. So, which was zero.
That's really good. Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. Sleeper program.
Yeah. It's good. It's good to have, you know, a diamond in the rough like that. I had an attending that came in my second year who was just at the VA because we utilize the VA because, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like a bottomless, you know, you know, the financials are, you have complete support for the full service connected veterans, which is great for them because, you know, and I think there's a lot of issues for some of the veterans. And I think for them to
for have sure.
to, complete oral rehabilitation from 0 to 100 is, you know, it's life changing for them.
Cover fixed at the VA? Because our VA, they usually only cover removable. So we were only able to do like locator stuff, nothing fixed in terms of like a, you know, full hybrid or something like that.
Yeah, we were doing fixed. Yeah.
Good. No, that's great. That's good. That's great. Good. Like I said, I'm a little far removed. So yeah. It's been a while since I've had to deal with a VA. That's so good for you.
It was lucky. It was really lucky to get that experience. So where are you? You're mostly in Arizona now or Austin?
Arizona. So full time. I own that practice. The whole Arizona Austin thing is honestly a long story that I'd have to tell you over drinks. But full time in Arizona, I work in my office about 3.5 to 4 days a week. And then we are in network with maybe at this point 5 PPOs. I've just dropped them over the years. So I've owned that practice for almost 7 years now, but it's 15-year-old practice. And then the Austin office, I built a surgical suite in a really nice office over there. And they'll just line up cases for me over there. A lot of full arch stuff and just, you know, typical onesies, twosies and some thirds and stuff. So I'll do that a couple weekends a month. And then, like I said, a lot of the teaching on the full arch side. So that keeps me busy enough. That's enough stuff.
Way more than enough. That's way more than enough. And we'll definitely get into the teaching stuff. In Austin, did you work with Dr. Sammy over there? He's got a long...
I know Sammy. Yeah, we know each other. Yeah. So he worked with Dan Holtzclaw, who I teach with. I've taught with him for almost 5 years now. And then before that, and Juan Gonzalez was there too, who's also a friend of mine. I just saw them a couple weeks ago, Juan, when they were teaching a course in Austin. So yes, Sammy is up north, like pretty far north Austin, and we're more on like the southwest Austin. So if you know anything about Austin, like the traffic can be pretty bad. So honestly, like going way north to way south it's like a different world, right? Hmm. We don't run into each other too often, but yes, we definitely know each other. He's a good guy. Has he been on your podcast?
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I like him.
Has he been on your podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. You guys talked about like Twosome and like the insurance stuff and all that, right? He's big on that stuff.
I thought that was really cool that he's doing that. I wanted to see if I can contribute to his project, or at least after boards. But I think that's such an excellent idea that he's doing with the insurances and stuff, because I think that's very needed.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, my practice, I try to be less and less insurance dependent. I think it depends on the type of practice you run, where you're practicing, and honestly, the level of practice that you're at.
Right.
I'd like to think we're a pretty high-end, high-level practice, so we've been able to kind of slowly get out of the insurance game. But you still have to take them. You still got to grow a practice in the end, especially when you're young and you own a practice early on. You know, I've run into a lot of young – I don't know if you want to go in this rabbit hole, but I've run into a lot of young guys that – maybe listen to too many business consultants that tell you like you can run an out of network practice right off the bat and or fee for service and all this other stuff. And it's like, you have to earn that kind of practice. If you don't know anyone or they don't know you, you can't grow a practice with nobody in it. And the easiest way to get it is to be a network. And it's a pain, but then get yourself out of it then.
Right.
But you have to build up to that. If you have no cash flow, it doesn't matter if you're out of network or not. It doesn't matter how good your level of service is. If you just can't get patients in and reviews and word of mouth and like actual organic growth, because that's the majority of my growth. I don't really spend that much money in marketing, dude. And you know, it's just organic growth. Word of mouth is still stronger. In 25, they're with AI, all this other crap.
Yeah.
Word of mouth, man. Like, hey, who does a good job with implants or wisdom teeth, whatever it is, right? Like, that's our bread and butter. You're not doing that at a high level. It doesn't matter whether you're fee for service or not. Like, you got to do them, and you got to, you know, and good people, they like to get paid. So you got to keep rolling it in so you can keep doing things at a high level. And then at some point when you're booked out, then start dropping them. Like, it's great.
Exactly. That's the exact plan. That's my hope. You got to gain reputation in the area. You know, you got to work with the dentists and do things the way they want it, gain the reputation and the word of mouth, you get fed. And then you could slowly filter off insurance plans that, you know, it's just not, you know, they don't want to increase their rates. And you have a packed schedule.
No,
you need to see the patient. You can't see patients 6 months away. So you got to start to fill out people so you can see the patients you need to see in a timely manner. I'm in agreement. I know the business consultants you're talking about. And
But the other part is, and this is true with a lot of younger surgeons. I'm not saying this is you, but you know, a lot of them want this immediate gratification of like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to be able to do this and that and this and that. I'm going to get paid this. I'm going to be able to do that. It's like, okay, dude, you got to remember, I always tell new grads, go back to when you were an intern in your first, Carl, we called our PGY1s interns, whether they were prelim or not, because they're equally useless, right? So like, it's true. They're the most dangerous person in the whole hospital. So So like, it's the same thing in private practice. It's like you get out there, you're in a new setting, nobody knows you, and you have to prove yourself again. And it takes time. It takes reps. It takes time. You have to keep learning. You have to keep evolving. And it's not just because, well, I did this residency, I got this piece of paper, this cert, and I got this A-bomb thing now. So like, I'm going to go, right? It's like, nah, dude, like, you're not going to starve. But if you want your dream practice or your dream anything, like, it takes time. And that's the grinder. It's just the discipline to just do stuff that you don't want to do every day. And that's what owning a practice is, honestly. It's like, there's a lot of stuff I do I don't want to do, but that's what it is, right? I mean, like, nobody likes a whole column full of biopsies, but I mean, who else is going to do them? And if they're referring you good stuff, then you got to take the other stuff. And that's how you build a relationship. And that's how you keep moving. And then whatever it is. And then at some point you can narrow it down, but it takes time, dude. Like, I mean, I'm almost 10 years out and, you know, we all got to shovel shit once in a while. Right. So
we got to do it. We got to do it. And no, it's, that's exactly it. No, I didn't come in expecting to just be, you know, hop, skip and jump into some high expectation, you only do what you want to do kind of thing. No, I know that's not how it goes on.
Yeah, you don't seem like that kind of guy. That's what I say. I don't think that's you, but I definitely see that. Yeah.
You got to put in the work. So tell me about Arizona. What did you pick Arizona? Are you from Arizona? I want to, like, give me some of your background. I'm curious.
Yeah. So I grew up in, born and raised in Southern California. And I did everything there. I did my high school, undergrad in San Diego. I grew up in Little Saigon in Orange County, where all the other Vietnamese people are with my last name. And then, went to undergrad in San Diego.
Do you pronounce it Nguyen or Wen? Because I've been told two different.
I just tell people to say Wen. It's easier that way. Okay. So, I did my undergrad in UC San Diego, dental school at USC in LA, and then I left to go to Carl, and I was in Illinois, and I didn't like the direction California was going. No offense to Californians, it's state. It's beautiful, good food. I miss it. My friends, family, they're all there. I go back and I miss it. But at the same time, I just didn't think it was the greatest place to make a living anymore. So when I was at Champaign, you know, we don't get paid much in residency. And I'm sure my salary as a resident went a lot further in Champaign, Illinois than yours did in Manhattan, probably. So like, and I was like, wow, like I can live pretty good because I didn't come from much. So I was like, yeah, this is great. I got my own place. I got my own bed. You know, I didn't have to pack four people in the apartment like we did in San Diego. So I realized, like, hey, I can make a pretty good living. I was raised by my grandparents. So when I was finished with residency, at first I thought I was going to go back for sure. And then I realized I don't want to go back. So I looked into doing moving into Texas or Arizona because I'm a competitive shooter as well. And I wanted options for that. That's a different story.
Wait, real quick. You're a competitive shooter? This is awesome.
Yeah, so I'm a competitive shooter. The majority of what I do is USPSA. So basically, you run around multiple stages set up with paper and steel targets, and you're running around with a loaded gun on a timer, and you're being scored with accuracy and time. And there's multiple stages, and I work a lot now. I told you what I do now. So I don't do it as much as I used to, but I used to travel around the country during, you know, major match season and stuff like that. So I actually got decent at it, but
let me just get into
that. Yeah. So and then I used to do three gun, which is rifle, pistol, shotgun in one stage. So that was fun. It just got harder to travel for it because you got to have like three long guns, your optics, and you have to travel with all that. It's a lot. So traveling with a pistol is a lot easier.
An airplane. Yeah.
Probably so anyway, not. So as I picked that up, Arizona, you know, you could shoot a match every weekend. That was nice. So on the hobby side, it was great. More realistic. So like the job aspect. So my first job as an associate was with a guy that had done our residency at Carl about 15 years before me. So we ended up hooking up, and then I worked for him for about a year, and then moved on, joined a group practice in Scottsdale, and then I did not enjoy that as much. So I found my practice, I bought it, and I moved across the Phoenix Valley, and then that's where I've been at ever since. So the goal was just to be closer to my grandparents, I'm glad, because it's an hour flight to go back home for me from here. So when they were getting sick and stuff, it was easier for me to just fly back and forth. So I'm glad I did that. So yeah.
You're a real frequent flyer. I mean, you're all over the place.
American Airlines loves me, bro.
Me too.
So I'm the highest tier that isn't the concierge key. Dan Holtzclaw has that one. Dan, if you're listening to this, I'm going to get it. But yeah, that's my goal. But yeah, at this point. Yeah, I do have the credit card for the business side. That helps a lot. So yeah, all of our trips and, you know, even the business travel back and forth to us, and it helps a lot. Yeah. It makes the P&L look a lot better.
Of course. Yeah. How far away is Austin from you? So it's an hour back to California, San Diego, right? And then how far from where you are to Austin?
Austin's about an hour and a half to a little less than 2 hours each way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Have you, by the way, I'm just curious, do you drink beer at all? Because I went to Austin a year and a half ago for a bachelor party, and the Pilsners down there, out of this world.
I don't drink a ton of beer, but I'm more of a Scotch guy. But yes, I do drink beer, and their beer is amazing. So they have great breweries towards where our office is, and it's called Dripping Springs. It's like a smaller area, a little suburb of Austin that's growing a lot too. There's a ton of good breweries there, like Twisted X. Mm-hmm. There's a few of those. They have some good beer down there. Yeah, they have some really good beer down there.
Very impressed. Whatever they're doing, they got to keep doing it because they're doing it right.
New York has some pretty good breweries. The Brooklyn one is pretty good.
It's good.
I know you guys got more and more of those microbrews now. I'm not as into as I used to be. Beer doesn't agree with me. That's what happens when you get old.
Gotcha. Yeah, it happens. Milk doesn't agree with me anymore. I know. I know.
Milk never agreed with me. Asian, so lactose.
So about your practice, I wanted to ask you about that too. So you said you're 3.5 days a week. Which days are you, since you're traveling around on the weekends?
It alternates. So generally, if I'm not traveling Tuesday to Friday, or if I'm doing a course, I try to schedule the courses on a Saturday, Sunday, so that I can still work a Friday. You're an oral surgeon. You know how good Fridays can be for us. So I don't like losing Fridays whenever I can. But when I go to Austin, I'll work a Monday to Thursday, fly out after work on Thursday. Work Friday, Saturday in Austin. I'm trying to do less Saturdays, but it's not working out that way, so it's fine. And then I'll fly back. I try to have one admin day in my office, so I'll fly back on Monday, handle whatever I need to handle at home, so lecture slides and the business stuff, and put out fires, all that stuff, and then back to the grinder Tuesday to Friday, and just Tuesday to Friday, do it all over again.
Yeah. I always love that combo, the Tuesday to Friday, to include Friday, because Friday can be a great vibe, you know, for practices, especially.
Dude, I mean, everyone else, all the other dental guys can take a Friday off. If it were up to me, I would never lose a Friday because they're just so good. I mean,
they're great. But what I'm saying, like the vibe on Friday, people are generally happy. It's a Friday. On Monday, no one's happy in the office. Like the vibe.
Yeah, but you know, there's a Friday curse for oral surgery, right? You know that. All the difficult patients, the difficult sedations, the difficult surgeries, they tend to come out on a Friday too. So there is the oral surgery Friday curse, and that I think is a real thing. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, it certainly is. But yeah, I do like that combo of the Monday off and keeping Fridays on. But how often a month are you going back to Austin for the Friday Saturday duo?
At least twice a month.
Twice a month. Oh man. Man, you are packed. And then, so now, when are you traveling to teach, to do the courses?
Depends on the year. Last year, I was doing something almost every month. This year is probably every other month I'm doing some type of course. The issue is I'm doing more and more international stuff too. So it's a blessing and a curse. It sounds, like I said, all this stuff sounds great, but it's hard to juggle it all. But like when you take a week off, like, and you don't have an associate, it's a thing, right? So. I am looking for one. I have no associate. It's hard to find a good oral surgeon. I'm just saying, but I am looking. I'm actually interviewing a guy this week, and I've interviewed people. I mean, like I said, it's just a fit. It's just like residency, man. Like you got to deal with this person all the time. You got staff. You got like. You know, when you build a good culture, and I could talk about business all day, by the way, when you build a good culture, it's, you know, you got to find someone that fits in that culture. And there's no exception to that. Like you will ruin a perfectly good thing if you just hire the wrong person with the wrong fit for the culture. Like poison in the water is a real thing. So I'm sure you've seen that already in your time with dealing with staff and stuff like that, because you have a big, huge practice. There's no way you have like
Yeah.
Yeah. So one person can bring down a whole operation. And, you know, we deal with referrals. So you have to have somebody that understands the referral relationship and what comes into that for that particular practice, because every practice is a little different.
Do you rank a, like you said, it's hard to find a good surgeon, right? I get it. Do you rank good surgeon based off of skill alone, talent, but you're saying culture as well? So it's probably a balance between the two. Is there something else? I'm not.
Yeah. So remember I talked to you about like when it's your first job or your first, you're in a new practice, you got to remember, you got to pretend that you're an intern again, because it's a new setting. You got to build relationships, not just with patients and referrals, but with the staff, with your boss, whatever it is. Like that's any new setting, no matter how seasoned you are, right? Mm-hmm. And every practice does things differently. And if you talk to any, you know, business consultant, which I don't believe in everything they say, trust me. But one of the things that helps a lot is to have a teachable person that can not just make up for your downfalls in terms of the clinical stuff, but also as similar as you can to approaching patients and talking to them and like the way you set up for surgery, it'll make things run so much smoother, and you'll have it, like it'll be easier for my assistant to set up for your surgery just as easy as it would be for like one of mine if we can at least have the same tray, right? Once you start mixing things up, it gets difficult. And these are little things. Like, I'm not going to hire and fire somebody based off of that, right? But these are little things that optimize a schedule, because I don't know how big your practices are. I have a 2,500 square foot office. I have three local slash consult rooms and then two GAs. And I can run all five. And I run all five. And I can work. I see about 25 to 35 patients a day. And like, I can work. And to add somebody to that, you have to really have like everything in order. And so I'm a patient guy. I just think it's up to me to mentor the person. But the person has to be able to accept the mentorship too, right? And like I said, a lot of younger surgeons, they're ready to get after it, but they don't realize how much they need to learn. Because residency, it's just like dental school. It doesn't teach you everything. It's just giving you foundational skills and a work ethic and a way of approaching a patient as a whole body, right? That's where our specialty is really good. But it's giving you a foundation. You still don't know how to do everything.
You know nothing. You know nothing. As far as private practice goes, residents know nothing. Like that's, I talk to a lot of residents and I talk to a lot of attendings, and they're like, all these residents coming out, they think they know everything already. I'm like, I don't know why. Why would you possibly think you know everything? You're just a resident. You need to be an owner. You need to have the owner mentality of a practice. Anyway, so I'm sorry.
No, and I'm glad that you see it that way, because it's true. I mean, and you know, what I like that you do is you talk to everybody, which I love, and you're getting a point of view from a lot of people. And I can see you've absorbed a lot of different point of views, which is great. And, you know, I think you've prepared yourself for the mentality of what to expect in private practice, probably more so than the majority of oral surgery residents that I've interacted with fresh out of residency. And that makes you, and that's part of your desirable hire. That's great. And so like that mentality of, again, I call it the intern mentality. If you do a martial art, they call it the always white belt, right? You're always learning something. You're always trying to be better at something. You're never going to act like you know everything. And even now, like just because I teach something doesn't mean I know everything about it. Like I'm surrounded by people that I ask questions about. I want to know how they do things. I want to see how they approach things. I'm always curious about stuff like that. I'm never walking into a room going, you have to do it this way. Like I respect, you know, when we teach in Brazil, right? It's like me, Dan, and David Zelig. The three of us do things a little differently. Overall, we probably see things 99% of the same, but we're still approaching things differently. Dan's a periodontist. Me and David are oral surgeons. Like we have a different way of approaching things and explaining things, but we all respect each other. Because we all know that we can get to the same endpoint, right? Maybe a different way of doing it, but that's important. It's just like as a resident, you had a different attending that would do the same damn surgery completely differently. And they would act like you're stupid for doing it their way sometimes, right? Yeah. And like that's okay, because your job is to figure out how, okay, I like the way he did this. And that's what I did, right? It's like, I love the way, you know, Norbit did his orbits. And I love the way Bailey did this through the neck. And like, well, of course, he's a head and neck guy. Or like, I like the way Sable did wisdom teeth like this. And, you know, and then you go out and you go, well, I never really did a zygote or full arch. I'm going to have to learn this stuff. But at the same time, it's like, dude, we got the foundation. So it's like, you're just building off of a foundational skill that you already got from 4 years of being worked to death and being accountable for all of the experience that you got to have. have. So yeah, I think
even like going with one that works best for you.
Yeah. And that's important. So it's the same thing. Like when you, if you're going to someone else's practice, you're going to pick the things just like in residency, things that you like that they do, things that you don't like, or things objectively you can see that maybe work, don't work. So you can change that and whatever. So like, it's just as valuable when you were seeing your senior residents, some of them got into trouble for doing things. And your job is to go, I'm not going to do that. Right. And that's the same thing like in practice. It's like if some people do things, they get into trouble. You go, okay, that's going in the memory bank. I'm not going to do that. Right. And then you never forget it. And like, that's the goal in when you go into someone else's office is like, hey, okay, what can I take from this? Right. I'm going to learn something useful or not. And it takes a while because I know you're young in your career, but it's like, you know, when my first job didn't work out, it's a bummer, right? And you think it's going to be perfect. But at the same time, like, okay, now when I look back at it, I learned a lot of good things from that job. And for better or worse, it made me better. I had to experience that to get to where I am now. It's like that's residency. True. You had to experience that to get to where you are.
Yeah.
So
you're gonna make mistakes, but you learn more when you could observe mistakes too and learn from all of it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you're being given 4 years of an opportunity to learn from other people's mistakes, make your mistakes, and not be the one that's gonna be ultimately responsible. You're getting a free pass. You're sacrificing 4 years, but you're getting a free pass to get tons of experience and be able to be scot-free, basically, right? Like there are consequences, trust me, guys. Residents can get fired. I've seen it. I'm just saying, like, it's you know, you're practicing under someone else.
Yeah,
like, and there's someone over your back. There's people making sure you're not screwing things up too bad. I'm trying not to curse here. Like,
so, I saw the comment. I was like, you can.
Yeah. I'm trying not to curse here. So, but like, if, you know, like these are opportunities that you get. It's the same thing. Like you go into someone else's practice, if you don't own it, like I'm not saying screw around because it's still your malpractice and your name, but it's like, dude, like you're, it's like a education of you can how to run a practice, what to do, what not to do, things that you can implement that you might not want to do or whatever, right? And then if the day ever comes and you own your own, now it's just on you. You don't have anyone else to blame. But if you just threw away all your prior experiences and just poo-pooed it, then you have nothing to show for it other than maybe some money that to pay for the practice, right? Like even my least favorite job that I had, I learned a lot. Like,
you gotta learn from every opportunity, right?
You have to approach it that way. Like, it's like every case that you do in the office, like it's a learning opportunity. And for you, it's an opportunity to study for your boards because everyone's got medical stuff and it's a procedure. So you can just re-go through the procedure like you're in your boards. And that's what I did when I was studying for my boards. Whenever patient came in, I just pimped myself in my head.
Do I like it. That. I had the osteoporosis one come up today. Patient on alginate, taking a PO for a year. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you just go there, just pimp yourself, dude. Like, okay, what's this med? What's another way? What's this mechanism? How would I manage it? What's the stages of osteonecrosis? All that stuff. And you just go down the rabbit hole and then boom, you just had a little studying lesson and, you know, you're working.
Yeah. And oh, that's a great point. No, that's a really good point because, you know, during the day, especially, and a lot of people practicing right now, if they end up listening to this, it's you have to find time to study for it. So in a literal scenario with a patient is the perfect timing just to run through in your head while you're like going through the scenario. But what's kind of like your day-to-day in your own practice? Because I know when you're going to courses, when you're going to Austin, it's mostly all annexes, it's zygomatics, it's full arch reconstruction stuff. What about your own practice? What do you do day-to-day? What's your favorite stuff? I'm just looking to...
So that's a good question. Full scope, I do everything. Thirds, obviously lots of thirds. Single implants. We do a lot of immediate implants. That's kind of half of my implants are singles. The other half are full arch. Excuse me. I still do pathology. What was that? Yeah. Yeah. And then that's in terms of like just raw number of implants. So I do about 1,000 implants a year, like myself. We do a lot of singles. I do teach some singles here and there, but not as much as the full arch stuff. I just don't have time for it. And then I see all ages. We're in a up and coming kind of neighborhood in Arizona. It's Surprise, Arizona. So my office is Surprise Oral and Implant Surgery. They think Surprise, like Surprise, like that's how they're translating that. It's literally the city of Surprise. Yeah. A lot of people are moving in there. So I see like little kids all the way up to retirees that are like ASA 3.5 to 4. Yeah. So you want to talk about good board study material. That's my patient population on the medical side for sure.
Man.
Yeah, so we see some pretty compromised patients and stuff, but they're great. You know, everyone thinks like, oh, you live in a retirement community, you must be like crushing it with all these people. It's like, no, dude, not everyone retires well. Like, I'm not in a Paradise Valley Scottsdale. Like, there's both ends of the spectrum when it comes to people retiring. So, by the way, since you're young, if there's anything I've learned when it comes to practicing in an older neighborhood with some older patients and stuff, prepare for your retirement early. Right, nothing's worse. Nothing is worse than retiring and your entire living is based off of like your social security check.
Right.
It's really sad. Yeah.
Oh, so invested in Bitcoin and buying the house. So.
I do have hospital privileging. I don't use it as much. I'm pretty aggressive about what I can do in the office, though. I have like mid-face plating kits, and as long as they can open their mouth, I don't mind doing some pretty aggressive INDs and stuff. So, but I do have a hospital privileging. I've done like, you know, myxoma resections, posterior crest bone grafts and stuff like that. Some fractures here and there, but for the most part, bread and butter, oral surgery, teeth and titanium type stuff. On the full arch side, yeah. Where I do very difficult cases. So my cases are usually either revisions or very compromised patients with not a lot of bone and their bone quality is like not great. So good amount of zygomatics and pterygoid, lots of pterygoids for sure. I did the first transnasal implant in Arizona.
That's right.
That was about 4 years ago. Yeah. And, you know, just that's kind of what we're known for. We have a lot of referral basis and self-referred patients for that purpose. I have a great lab partner that I've worked with for years now. I have an awesome anesthesiologist that I've also worked with for a while. So he has a full setup, visor and everything. But for little kids, we can just mask them. And then for the grown adults, just nasal tube and, you know, for like a full arch or something like that. But that's the majority of the practice, man. It's just a lot of teeth and titanium type stuff. A lot of Amaranth because of the older population. Yes. Unfortunately, I do see a good amount of Amaranth. I'm very passionate about my feelings towards denosumab. I think there's a lot of people getting into trouble because they just want to take on things that they don't know how to manage. I've seen some pretty bad ORN cases too, osteoarthritic necrosis. But yeah, good amount of path too. This last cyst, that's pretty much my practice, man. It's just, we're busy. Excellent. And, it's been a great 7 years. We've just grown and gone more and more out, which is my favorite thing. What about you? What do you want? What's your ideal practice?
Teeth titanium, exactly what you said. Not as much pathology, not as much fractures. Sure. I'll do benign a little bit here and there and stuff, but I just want to, I really like the all in excess. I do like zygomatic implants, whatever we can do in the office setting. I like to be comfortable in the office. You know, I like to be in your zone. Whenever you go into the hospital setting, I don't know if you feel this way, but you're dealing with the bureaucracy, you're dealing with their rules, you're dealing with like, how long does it take to turn over a room? You know what I mean? It's, and while I get it, you know, they got to run a hospital. It's also like, you're the one doing the surgery, not the people upstairs. And it's like, you know, you need a certain level of whatever it may be to be comfortable and focus solely on that surgery. And so I like to be able to focus solely on the surgery in an office setting. That's just my thing. But
yeah. I wish I could bring my staff to the hospital. So you used to be able to do that. This is before, you know, our both of our times probably, but you used to be able to bring assistants to the hospital and then they started requiring the credentials for basically a surgical tech. And obviously they don't have that. So, but they used to be able to come and scrub even with a scrub tech there and everything like that. And so now obviously you can't do that. And then bringing your own stuff to the hospital is becoming more and more difficult. And you know how SPD is, you're going to lose something, right?
Every time.
Yeah. So I've done, you know, like I said, for me, I'd rather just try to set up my office as close to an OR as possible without having to deal with all the red tape.
Hmm.
The biggest thing is finding the right anesthesiologist, honestly. Like I've been through quite a few and the guy I have in Austin and the guy I have in Arizona, like they're great. Like that's so important, especially since we both do our own anesthesia. So we're going to be pickier and find someone that will do it to your standard. Also understand turnover, have the relationship with the office. And they see the value in you. You see the value in them. It's a great, it's just hard to find that kind of thing because a lot of anesthesiologists, like they're very, it's very one directional. They want. Like, I want this many cases. I have to make this much to be able to go. And I want, like, they're very demanding for a guy that's taking your money. But like, you know, it's hard to find, like, and on the outpatient side, you know, in a hospital, you have all the backup in the world. in your office, the cool part is like my staff is very well trained. So like they all have ACLS, they all have PALS, they all have IV licenses, they all have dance. And like we are way more useful to the anesthesiologist to actually help him or her than, you know, anywhere else. So like I try to make it an environment that they're comfortable in so that they can take on the types of cases that I do, which are not easy cases on sicker people or little kids.
ASA 4, right.
They need to know. Nah, ASA 3.5. Let's just say that. ASA 3.5, okay? ASA, because...
3.45, yeah.
Yay! Because that has to be in an OR, right?
Yeah.
No, but he's an MD. So, like, he's got the two red letters at the end of his name. Yeah. So he can handle it. But that's the thing is not all anesthesiologists, some of them are a little squirrely about... even ASA 2 or little kids or whatever it is, right? So, you know, he's like, if I say boom, like he's like, all right, do boom. you know what I mean? Like he trusts my judgment of why I hired him for this patient instead of me doing it myself. There's a reason why, right? So if I say like, I know this one's going to be difficult, do boom. And like, he's like, all right, I'll do it. And then life is usually easier that way. And so like, it's a good mutually respectful thing. So you add that to like your lab partner, whatever it is on the full arch side and, or whatever, like just approach it the same way, just have build the right team. And then, you know, again, it took a while, but you'll go through phases and things don't work out, things change. But so far, like past, I'd say 3-4 years has been really stable on like the lab and anesthesia side. And it's a game changer, dude. It will make, especially as a specialist, because like we can't do everything in the house. Some guys do, but like I think what's made us somewhat successful is, you know, I try to spread the love. I want everyone to be successful that works with me, and I want them to benefit from working with me. It's not, it shouldn't be a one directional thing. You send me the patient and I get to have all this great stuff out of it. And then I just send you a bunch of garbage back. Right. It's like, so I try to make it a mutually beneficial relationship to whoever I work with, whether on the referral side, anesthesia side, lab side, whatever it is. And you know, if someone's benefiting me, it's my mission to grow them too. And that is what leadership is, by the way.
It is.
It's like you growing everyone around you, not just you. And that's a very important attitude, I think, to have if you want to last long.
A true leader. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to spread the wealth. That's why it's the quote, right? But it also incentivizes other people to work harder too. So if you find people that are passionate about it, right? You were saying like they're ACLS certified, PAL certified, dance certified. These people are top notch. And then you give them the month. Are you paying for the? You're probably paying for those courses, right? The ACLS, the PALS, and then it's like now they're there to learn. They want to learn. They're passionate about it. And you're just you're paying for that. For example, it's a small example of like finding top notch people, but then investing in them to get to the level they want to be at, right? That's something that I really appreciate in leaders. There, it's investing in the team that you want, you know. And that investment could just be time. It could just be time for mentorship. That investment could be financial compensation for whatever it may be. So always looking for those things too.
Yeah. So to building a good team makes it easier for you to concentrate on the things that one you want to do, but two, the I don't want to say any task is below you, but it's like there are certain things that are easier off delegated that are not a waste of your time, but your time could be better spent doing something else. So remember, I see 25-35 patients a day, right? On a non-full arch day. And in order to do that, they have to have the schedule like pretty tight.
The turnover.
And on the GA side, for example, so I'm sure it's the same in New York, but you know, all these electronic prescriptions, right? So like you're spending time on the computer, getting a note in, getting their prescriptions in when they check in for surgery. I don't want to be starting an IV and setting up. So like they do all that. They have an IV certification and everything. I start, my average for starting an IV is about once every 2 or 3 years. Yeah, it's awesome. In the Austin office, it's a little different, but like in my office in Arizona, yeah, I'm just trying to get through my paperwork. So like I refuse to sit on my desk at the end of the day doing paperwork.
So
I'll do it if I have to, but
yeah,
generally I'm not sitting there for hours after work putting in notes and stuff. Like this is all done right after the patient is done or right before the patient's done. So I'm putting in, you know, a note when the patient's checking for surgery. I'm putting in their scripts because I don't like prescribing stuff, especially narcotics, right? Like until they've checked in for surgery. And then my staff is setting them up. So they got the EKG, they have a questionnaire thing. They're starting an IV, drawing PRF, whatever it is. And they call me when they're ready. And I'm pushing drugs and we're done with surgery.
Right in it. Yeah.
They're recovering. They have the checklist. They have all this other stuff. Right. And I just go boom, 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 like that all day, all morning at least. And yeah, it works. And like I said, there always are things that if you have a good team and you expect more out of them and you mentor them so that they can actually advance and learn more. Yes, it keeps the mundane stuff of being an assistant out of it. So they're always like doing high level stuff compared to what their peers are doing in like general dentistry or even other peers in some oral surgery offices. Like there are some offices where there's the surgeon is still doing the IVs himself and they're still documenting everything and they're still like, it's like, geez, dude, like who has time for that? Like anyway. Yeah. And to each their own. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like, I would prefer to do it this way for me.
Yeah,
and it keeps me doing things medical legally so I can do my own notes because I'm big on that documentation. Mm. And then I can put in the scripts at the right time and my time is spent doing productive things like surgery, consults, whatever it is, right? So like that's one example of that. Like I have a great office manager. She does a lot for me. And like I have a great treatment coordinators, right? And they do a lot of communication on phones and stuff like that with other offices, all this other stuff. So I don't have to do it. But if I have to, yeah, all my referrals, especially my good referrals, like they have my number. Like even not the greatest referrals have my number. So if they need to reach me directly, like they'll reach me directly, that's fine. But it's few and far in between. Like for the most part, they can take care of this stuff, right? And I'm still managing the business, doing surgery, because that's how we stay alive. And then like rinse and repeat and give me an admin day so I can work on all the other stuff on the academic and business side. Then we can run a pretty well tight, you know, it's just giving them the expectation and the means to get there and the leadership so you can mentor them and guide them to make your life easier in the end.
Yeah.
But it's the best way, man, to like, it's a very, like when I'm gone, I'm not worried. A lot of people worry when they leave the office with nobody in it for a week. So if I go to teach in Brazil, there's no one in my office producing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just gone. In the end, they know what to do. They're filling up the schedule. They're following up on stuff. They got projects and, you know, I have a marketing coordinator, all this other stuff. They are doing things.
You got a well-oiled machine. Yeah.
Yeah. But you got to build, again, you have to build that. And sometimes it helps seeing someone else do it so you can get some ideas, maybe a business coach, whatever it is, or can help you.
Who helped you build this? Where did you gain your pieces from to learn the practice?
So I am still learning. Take everything I say with a grain of salt, first off. I don't feel like I've done it long enough to be able to tell anybody how to do anything, by the way. And here's why. There's a lot of people that do a procedure. Let's say zygos. So that's the hot thing right now, right? Remote anchorage. There are guys that have done this for barely a year and they're like teaching it. I don't think anyone should own a business for even 5 years and be able to say they know everything about running a business. I think it's just like what I said, it's just time. There's things you have to see cycles. You have to see ups, you have to see downs. So in my first year of ownership was when COVID happened.
That's tough. That's a tough time, but okay.
It was tough. And then one of my front desk girls actually passed away. So not from COVID, it was something else, but she was young. She wasn't even 30. Yeah. So she passed away. And then we had the COVID basically shut down. Now, the good benefit of being in a place like Texas and Arizona is we got up on our feet pretty fast.
Quick.
And we were able to recover. But when you basically see a full schedule turn into one or two emergencies a day, it's concerning. But how you manage the bad times is really important as an owner. And just like in residency, like you have great days and you have crappy days, right? And how you go bounce back from the crappy days is probably more important than how you succeed during good times, right? So what's that saying with the sailor, like smooth seas never made a great sailor or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really bad with quotes. So I honestly, right now in dentistry, post-COVID, there hasn't really been that bad of a time. And I can tell you that because I came from the pre-COVID area. So we haven't seen a huge downturn yet. So there's guys that are built, that are fresh out of practices ever since COVID happened in the past. I'm looking at the date right now. So the past, like, it's been 5 years, right? There are guys that just have practices and all they've seen is the glorious times.
It's a booming economy since the COVID dip. Yeah. It's just been straight. It's just been constantly going.
Yeah. We're overdue for something, right? It's not going to be perfect every single time. And I think we're starting to see that now, but whatever it is, I find it hard for someone to give advice. It's just like with surgery. I don't think you should be teaching something if you haven't seen the complications of it or managed it. It's the same thing. I treat that with remote anchoring. So that's one of my things that people know me for is complications. I've always been a big guy on complications. Every time I teach, I am always saying talking about complications, because that's the difference between someone that is just blowing smoke up your ass and someone that's actually seen, like, and can manage that anatomy at a high level. Yes. And so going back to the business side, it's the same thing. Like, I look up to guys that have went through 08. Mm. That 08 time, I wasn't around for that, right? I was, how old was I? I don't remember. I was probably in dental school. Anyway, so like those are the guys that you should talk to, because those are the guys that you've seen the downturn, or guys, like I said, with 19, you know, or 2020, like that went through that and then had to bounce back from that. And honestly, like, I don't think bouncing back from COVID was as hard as 08. I think 08 was way worse, because that wasn't just a mandatory shutdown and then a bunch of inflation. That was literally like people like losing their livelihoods, right? So for me, it's like I look up to guys that have done this for a long time, that have seen a lot of ups and downs. Same thing on the surgical side. Like, you know, I teach with David Selig. And he's in his 60s now, I think. He's seen more in his career than any oral surgeon can hope to see. And he's owned practices. He used to do a lot of orthognathic surgery. Now he just does a lot of full arch, but he's grown a lot of full arch stuff. He's seen a lot of complications. And the dude's the most humble, nice guy. Like, shout out to David Selig. And you should talk to him. He's in New York. That's a guy I want to talk to when I think about like where my career should go or like what he's going to do. Like, he's just a guy I want to hear stories. And I was, like I said, I was raised by my grandparents. So I learned a lot just talking to them, right, about their experiences and stuff, because you can learn so much. So anyway, so like that leadership is one thing. So seeing all the mistakes and all the pluses and minuses from the previous jobs I had, that helped a lot too, right? Again, you're learning from other people's mistakes, but you're also learning from what made them successful. So like the group practice that I was in, I hated it. However, I learned a lot about structure because it's a bigger practice. So they have a lot more of their paperwork tight and like employee manuals and, you know, bonus structures and things like that. Like, you don't get that really from a smaller practice. Even like my benefits, I have benefits that would probably compete with like big DSOs only because so I keep good people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, like the book that I would, the one book that really shaped, it didn't change me. It's just, it put it in words, the way I approach life, is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willing.
Extreme Ownership?
Yeah. So he's a former Navy SEAL task unit commander in Iraq. They were known for what they did in Ramadi. And so he headed a task unit and he wrote a book about leadership, what he learned in leadership in the military, but paralleled it to what we're doing in business and civilian life and just a way to live. So he's got two versions of it. He's got the original one, which is Extreme Ownership. The second one is the Dichotomy of Leadership, which is a great one. Yep. That's the one. Yeah. So, and the white one, it looks like there's like Dichotomy of Leadership somewhere in there too. Yeah. Both of those books are great. And so like, he's got a podcast and everything. That's how I first got introduced to him. But like I said, it's not that it changed me. It's just like, he just put in words and structured it to where it made sense for me to be able to start executing it and leading other people. So in my office, I buy everyone that book.
Really?
And yeah. I like that. Yeah. And we've done like group, you know, like almost like book club things. So I have a monthly office meeting. And so like back in the day, I used to have them read like either a chapter or two. It's a very easy read. So like I have them read a chapter or two. We discuss it a little bit. If there is like an issue in the office, I always refer back to the book. So I tell them, okay, since we're having this issue, I want you guys to read this chapter and this chapter, and we're going to talk about it next week. And I'll buy lunch.
I like
and,
that.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. So then you're taking, you're applying a real life scenario to something that's been tried and true. And then you go over the system, the process, the concept together as a team. I like that. That's good leadership.
Yeah. So they know. So, okay. One of the chapters is like, know the why, like believe, right? This is where the business consulting that I haven't gone through it, but the first practice I worked in, he had a consultant. I didn't agree with everything they said, but there was some good stuff. And one of the biggest things was there is a vision, right, as an owner, and it has to be clear. And your staff, whoever works with you, for you, with you, need to see that big picture, and they need to see how to execute it and what your belief system is, your values. That's the culture. I will never, and my office manager will tell you, I've beat this to death. I will never go back on the culture that I expect in my office from everyone. And that is the quickest way to get out of my office if you're not a fit on that side.
Yeah.
So I will not pollute that. And that culture of like owning your job and working well as a team and owning your position or whatever it is and looking after your team and knowing that the team is more important than whatever your selfish ego and all this other stuff. I can talk about this book all day, but the point is, you know, like that type of culture for me, I think more important than how good you are as a surgeon.
Yeah.
So you asked me to go back is clinically, you know, what's more important, right? I should be able to teach a monkey how to do a set of thirds efficiently. If you have half the hand skills of a monkey, you could learn how to do this stuff with repetition. The main thing is, are you going to be a pain to my culture or not? And there's some people that go in, like I said, whether you think you know everything and you're entitled to doing all these big cases and all this other stuff, that's one way to approach life. It's not going to be how you approach my office. And, you know, but the ones that are humble and understand, like, you got to earn stuff. And when you're in a small private practice, like, this isn't like DSO cash. We can just make it rain on you. It's hard earned stuff. But in the end, what you're getting is you're getting a place that is very respected with a very good culture, with very high level staff. And like, I can compare to a lot of, I have friends, obviously, that own their offices or that are DSOs and stuff. Like, we run a pretty high level practice. And again, I think it's because I don't allow the culture to falter. Yeah, to have a downhill.
You don't need to falter. Do you think that people that work with you, your team, do they enjoy going to work every day? Do they really?
I think so. No, I really do think so. Yeah, I've had people come from other offices, other environments and stuff. You know, people come home angry, you know, like, okay, I say this all the time. Work is about a third of your life. Just like sleep is about another third of your life. Life is too short to have two of those three things be crappy. Have a good bed to sleep in and have a good place to work in. And people that come to work happy and go home, even if it's intense, whatever it is, if they're happy and fulfilled, they'll come back the next day ready to do it again. And I'm not perfect, dude. Like, you know, like there's bad days too. Everyone has a bad day in the office.
But if
you think that your boss is going to have your back and is there to like truly take care of you and take care of the team, because that's the most important. It's like patient care and take care of your team. That's the two things I care the most about. Everything else we can figure out. Like finances, all that stuff. As long as we're not in the red, like we will figure out the rest. As long as the culture is good, you're taking care of each other and the patients are being taken care of. Like that's all that matters.
And so you can wait for a week at a time. So taking care of them and the little tasks, that's a crucial part of your business while you're away.
Yeah. So like in each office, how many people do you have working in the office for you?
Altogether?
Yeah.
Maybe
like
about
staff, eight, not including you.
Seven to eight. Looks like we hired another two people. So yeah, eight to nine now.
Yeah. And then, so yeah, I have 10 that work for me full time. So
how many do you have at the front desk? How many do you have at the front desk and then assistants? And then
I have one, so two in the front and two basically implant coordinators. I have an office manager, four assistants, and a full-time marketing coordinator.
Wow. So two implant coordinators and one marketing coordinator. That's what we have everything else, but we don't have that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we do enough full arch where I need dedicated people for that. Yeah. And my office manager knows how to do everything, front, back. She does ACLS and PALS too with us. Man, yeah, in the back.
That's talent. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. She started off as an assistant, but she was with the office before I took it over. So she has seen three different owners of the office. And she pretty sure she knows I'm the last. So yeah.
Wait, what do you mean? Where's it gonna go? You're not selling it, are you? You're gonna sell it?
No. No, I've been approached to. No, I've been offered some pretty good stuff, but no.
Sure, yeah.
With the teaching schedule and what I do in Austin, it's too difficult to work for someone. And so the big picture for me is, I don't know if I'm oversharing, but you know, I never wanted to be a solo practitioner. I never had that vision when I was
solo for 5 years.
Over 5 years, oh, almost 10. So I never had that desire to actually be a solo owner. But the problem was all the things I went through prior to doing this now, I did this because I finally felt like this is the only way I can practice the way I want to practice. No, if I work for somebody, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to practice the way I want to practice. Now, this is my realization, okay? For some people, it takes longer. For some people, they know right away. And some people, they never want to own a practice. And that's okay. I would never put a gun to someone's head and say, you have to own a practice. That's a miserable way to live because it's a lot of work. But like, I had to make the realization, okay. So then when I wanted to do it, I, you know, built this practice that started off as a satellite office. We made it a full-time office in 3 months. And like, we, you know, I had a clear idea that I just don't want to ever work for anyone again. And like, when you think about selling, you're basically saying, I'm okay being an employee for 5 years so I can get mine, right? And it's like the money that they offer you, if you're smart with it, you can make way more in private practice. But the beauty of it is of selling is, you know, obviously it's a lot. And then you can ride out in the sunset, you know, when you're done and fine.
Yeah, more or less.
To each their own. I'm not like everyone has a different goal in life and whatever. But again, I don't come from much. So I don't need to drive the nicest car. I just want to be able to retire well. And I see, because like I said, I see a lot of old people. And when they don't retire well, it's so sad. And I don't want the rest of my days to be like that. So I save a lot. I invest a lot. But I have a good time, man. I've been able to travel to places I would have never thought because of the teaching, which is great. And I've taken more vacation in this past year than I have my whole career. And I only want to keep that in a better motion. Yes, you have to earn that. And that's the thing is like, again, people want, sometimes there's no balance. It's just like in residency. There's no balance, right? When you sign up to do an OMFS residency, you're doing this not to make money because the money's shit. You're not doing it for a work-life balance because you're working 80 to 100-hour weeks easily. But you're doing it because the light at the end of the tunnel is going to be worth it. And like I said, I would do what I did all over again when I look back at it now. No matter how miserable I thought I was a few years ago when I was going through all this stuff with the first job and everything like that, dude, it had to happen. Just like residency, it just had to happen. And you know, everyone's going to have their own path. But man, like if you just put your nose to the grinder and like just keep learning, like it'll be great. So anyway, like I have no interest in selling right now. Yeah.
Good. Don't do it.
I don't want to do it. I'm not. Like I said, I've been offered some stuff and I've done the dance and it's not worth it, in my opinion. If it's worth it for someone else, great. I'm happy if you're happy. So, but for me to keep up with the teaching schedule, the Austin stuff, it's just easier if I'm self-employed. So, and there's a lot of benefit, like the write-offs that you get as a business owner and stuff like that, dude. Like you can't get that as a, like it's, there's so much like
you're the captain of your own ship. You get to steer your own direction. And that's, like you were saying, you could take off the time that you need to take off in order to go to the courses, go to Brazil and teach there. How often are you going to Brazil too, by the way?
This year. So I'm going one more time in December. It's going to be 3 times this year. Next year, I'm going twice. And then I have one thing in Europe that.
And Europe now.
We'll announce when it gets closer.
Gotcha. Yeah. I want to hear when that is. Also, another quick thing. Which do you think is your favorite part and which do you think is the most lucrative? And why do you get the most return on it? Whether it's financially, whether it's just like in your heart, right? Because you have the courses, you're working in Austin, and then it's your baby. It's your private practice in Arizona. Which one do you think is your thing?
Yeah, so clearly lucrative. So here, I'll answer the quickest question is my practice in Arizona. How do I put this? Nothing makes you feel more responsible when there's 10 people that depend on you for paycheck to feed their family. And
you have a lot of wisdom, by the way. You have a lot of wisdom between being raised by your grandparents. You have just a ton of wisdom. Yeah, anyway.
Well, he was in the military. So my grandfather was a colonel in the army, in the South Vietnamese army. He actually got a Bronze Star from the U.S. And so he moved my family in 75. We were the first wave of immigrants. Obviously, I wasn't born yet. So like he's been through a lot. And when he passed away, his chief of staff was still alive and made a speech. And like my grandfather was always known as someone that looked after his team. Mm. I never forgot that. So fast forward, when it came to owning my practice, I also started off as a dental assistant. So I got my x-ray license when I was 17 in California. So I was taking dental x-rays and, you know, hole and suction and stuff like that while I was in college and in between like summer breaks and stuff. So like, I remember what it was like to be a dental assistant. It's a hard job to show up every day for, especially if you're not in it. Right. So
waiting to apply to dental school. Yeah. Yeah. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. So like for me, like the light at the end of the tunnel was I was trying to get into dental school. Right. For them, this is their job. Like for a lot of them, this is going to be like their career. So you need to motivate them to show up every day and like you got to treat them well. And, you know, again, it has to be a give and take. Like they have to show up too. They have to do their part of it, their end of the deal. It's not like they walk all over you. There's an expectation. But, you know, again, nothing should be one directional in business. And like you should give as much as you're being given. So like, or if not, give more. But like, so that is the main motivating thing that is very fulfilling, is that I feel like, one, we treat patients at a very high level. And I do feel like there's certain environments where you, as a surgeon, it's harder to do that. Because you're not owning it. So the fulfillment for me is I have a lot of happy patients that like the way that they're treated in my office, whether it's the surgical part, the technical part, or just the environment. I'm looking after 10 people that, you know, I feel like, look, they depend on me. So I have to be on my game, A game, every day for them.
Yeah.
And then financially, of course, yeah, we do really well. Yeah. I think on average, as a solo guy, I'm probably in the top 3 to 5% of guys as a solo. So we do really well. But the teaching is super fulfilling.
Mm.
It's not going to pay. It's not even close. Like, I'm not going to divulge too much, but let's just say I can do one day in my office and it'll be like a lot of teaching days. But it's like, it's a labor of love. And like I said, I do feel like we do things at a pretty high level in my office, and we do treat a lot of complex cases, but also complications. And, you know, I think we have a unique point of view, and I feel like it's an honor that people would even listen to someone that looks like they're 12 years old about my experience with all this other stuff. Dude, I have a baby face, man. Like, it's just Asian genes, dude. Like, I'm going to look like this tomorrow. Dude, I'm going to look like this till I'm 65, and then I'll look like Mr. Miyagi, like overnight. It'll be like that. So I mean, I think it's fulfilling. And then the Austin part, that's also more of a personal thing. Not personal, like I won't tell you. It's just like it's a personal reason why I do that.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's for another day. But like, it's a very personal reason why I do that. So the fulfillment for that for me is I'm helping someone else build, and I'm doing it pretty much for fun, like just because I like the game. And I like so I don't say this out loud that often, but I miss the early days of owning my practice when I had a small group and I was stoked to make six figures in a month. And those days are long gone now, but like that grind, the buildup is so fun.
Mm.
It's so fun. You will never be as motivated as after you just buy a practice and you're scared shitless and you realize like, oh my God, like everything is on me. And, you know, this is my baby and my whole entire living, my family is based off of this little building right here and what comes out of it. And then when COVID happens, again, just the amount of motivation, and because you're scared and I miss those days, because like, it's not that I'm not driven now. It's just a different it's just completely different, like, environment. And I miss having a small office sometimes too. It's a little less drama when you have a smaller office, but it was those were good days, man. Like just going from a satellite office to that was basically failing to having a full-time office in like 3-4 months, and like all the marketing and just like trying to get patients and meeting people and schmoozing and just like all the business stuff just to establish the practice stuff, and like the how scared you were every day. Like I remember getting in because so banks are on the East Coast, so you're lucky. You have to deal with like the banks on the on your time.
For now.
Yeah, I have to deal with banks on the East Coast time out here in the West Coast. So I would go into the office. I'd be the first one in just so I can get on the phone with Bank of America or whatever, insurance, all this other stuff. They're usually on East Coast time or Midwest time because like Omsnick is on Midwest time. So anyway, like I'm on the phone with them before I even get started, right? And then my staff is pouring in. We got to bang it out, do marketing. I was doing like a lunch and a happy hour pretty much every day I was in the office. And I was driving across the valley at my old job for 2 days a week initially. And then like at the end of the day, now you got to catch up with all the little paperwork and emails, all the stuff that you got to do just to get the business like established and all this other stuff. And
keep it going for
COVID. You're doing that for like, dude, the first 6 months is miserable. Like I remember being by myself at like 8 p.m., you know, sun's down because it's like wintertime and like sun's down. And I'm just sitting here like, dude, I don't know if I'm going to make it. and then here you go now, right? And it's like that, you'll never get that feeling again. I really don't. I mean, and I see why some people just build businesses up and enjoy the upswing, and then they don't do well on the plateau to keep growing. And that's the most dangerous part, is doing the mundane stuff and trying to optimize, even if you have a good, and just constantly be on top of it. And that gets harder in a business to do after you've had that acute upswing, because now you think you're unstoppable. But that's where people make the most mistakes, in my opinion. Is they don't do the maintenance part. Yeah. And so like, all right, when you were a resident, when you learned a new procedure, you were excited about it. It was the first, like a bicoronal, right? I remember like when I was an intern, a bicoronal flap. Oh, dude, everyone wanted to be there. Like, I got to see this thing. You can scalp a guy and like look at his eyeball and repair his frontal sinus and his brain. Like, dude, this is crazy. And then like, it's like, all right, I've done it. Whatever, it's fine now. Like you get over it, right?
Yeah.
But that's where people get sloppy, and it's just like when you see people do thirds and they get sloppy, and they start losing teeth and the vertebral fossa, the sinus, all this other stuff. The principles remain the same. It's like the vision of always visualize. You know, have the little chopstick squeeze on it when you're rolling it out on top. If it's a little marble, like these are all things you can't forget to do. Otherwise, you'll get sloppy and make mistakes. It's the same thing with a zygo. See it every single time. See the drill exit. Have the right amount of exposure. Irrigate the hell out of it. Make sure you're not overextended. If you're overextended, burr it down. Don't skip those steps. And like when I teach people, there's some people already just in their first couple of zygos are like trying to skip steps. Like, oh, do we have to do this? I'm like, yes. Yes, you do. Yeah. Every time.
Right.
It's like that in business. It's like every day you have to show up and you have to know what's going on in your office and know what's going on with your staff. And like, you can't have an off day, and like all the little things you hate doing, you're still going to have to do it.
Right.
And, and once you start getting sloppy, there's going to be a downswing that you're not going to like. And it's hard to recover from that, especially if your people stop respecting you. They need to see you driven every single day. Yeah. You're the example, right? As a leader. It's just like I mean, when you had a chief resident, if they were lazy and they were just sitting around and they made all you guys do stuff and they weren't really doing anything, you're not going to respect that guy. I wanted my interns to know that I'm working harder than you. I'm getting ready for tomorrow. I'm bending this bar right now. I'm making sure this VSP is going to be done. I'm for this fibula. I'm going to make sure, like, you know, the call schedule is set for the next whatever, because we had to do all that stuff back then. And like, you need to know. You're working, dude, so they can keep being motivated to fill your schedule.
And seeing is believing, right? Because people that you could be working all the time, but if you're at home or you're not somewhere where they are, they just think you're hanging out. You're putting your feet up, right? But that's not it. You have to stay present. You have to be taking action in front. You know, people need to see what you're doing. I gotta go into it. Yeah.
Sorry. So if you, but that's the other thing too. It's like I'm gone a lot because of teaching Austin all this other stuff. But they know I'm not just screwing around. But when working. I actually take you're a vacation, working. They're actually happy for me, which is what you want. Like, it's the same thing for them. Like, if they take a vacation, I don't want them to be like, oh, no, you're going to be going. It's like, nah, it's like, good. I set this up so that, you know, if one person leaves, I'm not screwed. So, like, that's the other thing is you set up the business that way. So, sorry if I keep yapping around. I don't know.
No, do you have a family? Do you have a my last question before I got to sign in one or two. But do you have a family? Do you have a wife, kids, significant other?
Wife, kid. Yep.
When do you have time to see them? When do you have time to?
I see them. Yeah,
they're in the office.
I'm around.
They're in the office.
Yeah, no, I'm around. I have a complex setup there. Again, that's part of the long story part, but I do. And again, part of what I'm trying to do with an associate and things like that is so I can have some more family time in between all that. My wife is my biggest supporter and she is fantastic. Like she comes with me for a lot of the courses. If she's been she gets to travel with me and stuff like that. And she's great. Like she's been super supportive about the whole thing. And
yeah,
she's got great judgment too. Like picking a wife is the most underrated thing.
Number one, pick the right person.
And like she's great and she has great judgment. She's saved me from myself a bunch of times. And I would be an idiot if I didn't give her some credit for first off dealing with me. And then the second part is just like being able to like actually have very honest conversations and be like, is this really worth this? And whatever. Yeah. Like she's saved me from myself a lot. She's helped a lot. Yeah. Pick your, are you married?
Just in a year, a little over a year. Yeah, I'm engaged in everything.
Oh, congrats. Yeah. It's awesome. Good. Yeah. So she survived residency then. You guys survived residency.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So good. I was like, that's, you know, she's the one.
Yeah. If they can survive residency. Yeah. I've had a couple of relationships that did not survive residency. That's how you know they're not the ones. But yeah.
That's how you know, right? You got to.
No, seriously. That's a big, and you did a 4-year, right?
Four year.
Okay. Yeah. 4 years. That's a long time to deal with stuff like that.
And not as many breaks as the 6 years. If you think about it, you know, the med school, the breaks, you know, the clerkships that they do, that some of them were having a month off. I know one of my buddies. Well, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I got to hear this stuff that we got to grab a drink sometime. We got to talk about that off the air, off the recording.
Anytime, dude. If you're ever here or whatever, if I'm ever over there, if we're at a conference, you show up to a course or something like that. Like, yeah.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Dude, oh, next year, you should definitely come. Courses. Yeah. You should definitely come. I don't know how much of the stuff you're already doing, but you know, for an OMS, I love teaching OMS this stuff. Like it's the easiest. They're the most stubborn, but also like if they truly believe, like they're the easiest to teach because you already know the anatomy. It's just the dissection is a little bit different. And then using your knowledge of, as long as you know basic full arch stuff, you're just adding, putting a screw in there, right? And the technique and stuff. It's so much easier like to teach an OMFS and stuff. I love it when OMFSs come, especially to Brazil. Like whenever there's a handful of them, I like to like, spread them out so like they can help the others too. So how much time you have, but like one of the most,
I got like 30 seconds. Yeah. But
one of the most fulfilling things for me, and I'll end it this is teaching my own specialty, this stuff, because I don't have to teach them anatomy and I don't have to have them understand the complications of things. It's, they respect the anatomy and the procedure in general. And it's fulfilling for me because I think our specialty is kind of lost implants a little bit. And like, I think
I'm not happy about it. Yeah.
And I think like that was one of my big missions when I started teaching was I want to bring the glory of, you know, implants, difficult cases and stuff like that. There's going to be a lot of revisions coming. So like, I think our specialty should be the forefront of that. But
it needs to be.
But we have to learn pros. That's the biggest thing. Learn pros. I had to learn a lot of pros. That's how you get to do a lot of this stuff is when you get really good at learning, understanding the prosthetic side.
Yeah.
And also like just understand like the pain of the pros part and make their life easier. But we also have to humble ourselves a little bit and understand like there's a nuance to every little procedure, whether it's doing a neck dissection for cancer or just placing an immediate implant, right? There's nuances to everything. And we have to respect that as a specialty. Otherwise, we're going to lose it to everyone else. So
sure. That's what's happening right now. I see it in the dental schools. We have to have a part two, Doc. We have to have a part two. I got to hop right now, but we have a lot of things we got to get into here. Cause I wanted to talk about that on the dental school level. Cause that's where the future of the profession comes from. All of the specialties come from that. Right. But
I'm down for a part two. If you want a part two, dude, I'm down. This is fun. Yeah.
We got to do it, man. I'm going to email you my, or through the DM, I'm going to email you my, my phone number, because then we could set up easier. Cause I like lost the email. Remember in like beginning of September, we were planning. It was like 17th. We got to do that. All right, doc, if you can stay on 10 seconds and just let it load into the cloud here, and it'll tell you when it's 100% uploaded, and then you can close out if that's all right.
Will do.
Thanks, man.
And all right, thanks, mate. Again for coming on. Have a good night.
We'll chat soon.
You too.